We take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion.
Hello, and welcome to this, the 232nd episode of Fusion Patrol. I am one of your hosts, Eugene.
I thought you were going to say Walter Cronkite there for a second. I'm Ben.
And this is the news. No, this is Doctor Who, The Woman Who Lived by Catherine Trigenega. I have no idea how to pronounce that name. But now I understand we might be mispronouncing Jamie Matheson. I've been hearing British people pronounce it Matheson.
Well, that makes sense given the spelling.
Yeah, I've seen it spelled that way before and been known as Matheson, but I don't know. That's an interesting one. When I see him at Gallifrey 1 this year, I will find out how he pronounces his own name. Anywho, let's get on with the show. The Doctor arrives in the 17th century, where he encounters the highwayman known as the Nightmare, who is a Shilder all grown up after 800 years and now known as Lady Me. Immortality has not worn well on her. Some vaguely plot-like stuff happens in which Lady Me and Lion-O from the Thundercats try to escape the planet, or so Lady Me thinks. Hilarity ensues at the Hangman's Gallows. All right, I'm sure our listeners have all seen it. So, just initial reaction, what did you think of this episode?
I liked it. I liked it better than I expected to.
Really?
To be honest. I mean, I thought I was going to really hate it. But I liked it. It was okay. I didn't like it as much as, you know, in terms of Jamie Matheson's portion of The Girl Who Died. But I still thought it was, you know, it was okay. I mean, it had some nice little bits to it. Had some nice callbacks, nice bit of humor, and it was a nice little. It was interesting. Keith and I, as we were watching, we both kind of looked at each other and said, "Oh, this is a psychological study on what it's like to be immortal, not just for her, but for the Doctor."
Interesting. I didn't hate it like In the Forest of the Night or anything like that, but I didn't really care for it, I have to say. I mean, it had some bits in it I liked, but as a whole, I just kind of felt like my hour was wasted. And it just, you know, it's funny. Upon, our listeners may or may not know, but we actually do it sort of edit this podcast occasionally. So before it goes live, I have to go through it again, and sometimes again, and listen to what we said. And sometimes that makes me reflect back upon an episode after we've recorded it and go, well, now that's interesting because now I'm not sure I think that way. And one of the areas where we stumbled on last time on The Girl Who Died was that we liked it, but it was the parts we didn't like that stood out.
Imagine that.
But the parts we liked, there's not much to them. And I, you know, they're just sort of like, it's sort of a pleasant.
Well, it's your basic Doctor Who story.
It's just sort of a little pleasantish sort of diversion along the way. And it's not that it's, I don't mean it that way, but I mean, even in terms of a Doctor Who story, if you got a 45-minute slot, they knocked out half of it for the stuff we didn't like. So you had a 15-20 minute Doctor Who plot. So it was very light. This one I felt was very light in the plot department again.
Oh, the plot department was very, very light.
Wispy smoke like the Mayflies in this one. This one was mostly about them sitting around and yakking about immortality.
Yeah.
And
yeah, in fact, the plot portion, if you want to call it that, dealing with Prince Thun of the Lion People, that's what I like to think of him as.
Leandro was his name.
I don't know.
That's what she.
I thought it was Leonidas, but I could be wrong.
from no, it's from Delta Leonis was the planet. It's like, who was naming this stuff? Terry Nation?
Oh, I know. It was terrible. I mean, talk about bad cliches. It was horrible. Yeah, that I thought was it was trivial, and to me, it was the MacGuffin order to have our two characters talking to each other.
I'm going to go on the limit here and say that I thought. I mean, as lion person costumes go, it sort of looked somewhere between 1980s Doctor Who and 2000s Doctor Who in quality. The glowing eyes looked terrible to me. I mean, they're obviously light bulbs.
Oh, I know.
And, you know, it didn't look like glowing eyes. It looked like light bulbs and fire breathing. It was just such a rubbish creature. it was awful.
And in fact, you know, and what
the disposition
me,
of it was, oh well, the guy didn't die, oh my people are gonna kill me.
What was driving me crazy is the way it was introduced. I expected more and something of greater significance and level of quality, I suppose, not just in terms of how they were, what we were seeing, but in terms of story quality, storyline quality. I was expecting better. And when it was finally revealed, I could almost see the writing on the wall on that. And when we get to the hanging, it was pretty clear that this was just the weakest, flimsiest of plot devices. I mean, there is no plot. It's all about the Doctor and Ashildur or Lady Me talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
That is the essence of the story. I mean, you have some fun bits like them trying to burgle that mansion for the Eye of Hades. That was fun. Went on a little too long. It was almost uncomfortably too long, but not quite.
Well, that music didn't help.
No, it was.
Ding, ding. Oh,
I know. It was rather tacky. Not tacky, but corny.
Here's the problem. You know, there was a little bit of fun there. I'll agree. But I was having way too much trouble suspending my disbelief with them being in a pitch black house with a candle and somebody walking through a door not noticing that there's another light source in a pitch black room.
Yeah, I noticed that
more
too.
Than once.
Well, the one that bothered me is when they see the servant lady, you know, she's walking down the hall and they duck into a room and then shut the door. And the first words that popped out of my mouth was, yeah, like she couldn't hear that.
Uh-huh.
Unless she's stone deaf.
So it was just pantomime. It was so silly that it pulled me away there too, and then the music just made it all the more Dance of the Sugar Plums kind of thing. It was, and yet Capaldi does it well. I mean, he did the humor well throughout the episode, and he had a number of, you know, light fluffy pieces, and I thought he did them really well. So, in a way, I don't want to condemn it for being silly and light, because he was doing a good job of it at times being silly and light. But I don't know. It didn't gel for me across the board. Some interesting ideas. One in particular I want to get to, but,
I think in my case, I've mentioned this before with other shows that we've reviewed, that I have this tipping point. And to me, those negatives didn't tip it past the point of appreciation, and to the point, I suppose you could say that. I mean, I acknowledge that they were there, but I dismiss them because I recognize them for what they are, and they're just little filler, because that's not the essence of the story. The essence is this relationship now that the Doctor has with Lady Me, and partly him trying to help her realize her humanity. And I kind of get the feeling that him doing that was not just a question of him helping her, but in doing so, he's helping himself hold on to his own humanity, even though he says that he needs the Mayflies, the companions, to do that for him, which to me seems like a very RTD thing.
You know, okay, this is... All right, well, the heck. Pick on this stuff. It's these themes since Doctor Who has returned that they just keep coming back to over and over again. The weight of the immortality on the Doctor, the weight of the passing of his companions, the fact that he's the man who comes in and leaves a god-awful mess and then buggers off afterwards. These are all modern themes to Doctor Who that really did not exist in classic Who. And I'm tired of them. I'm particularly tired of the "you're the man who comes in and leaves the mess behind," because it's not what he does. Wherever he shows up, you already had a mess.
Yes, exactly.
He puts it back on track and then heads off on his way. And, you know, 999 times out of 1,000, they are much better off.
Yeah, I mean,
when you're gone, the fact that it's not perfect is not his fault. It's not his fault he heads off after having done them a good deed or saved their planet from total destruction or overthrown an evil dictator or whatever he's done.
It's not his job to clean up that kind of mess either.
He helps the people rise up and do what needs to be done.
Right.
And then, but somehow they've turned that into, you know, look at the damage that the Doctor leaves behind. Look at the weapons that he turns his companions into. Look at the, you know, it just.
Yeah, that's
10
something.
10 years of this is too
much.
Oh,
I'm tired of it. Yeah, that is something I've never liked ever since Doctor Who came back. I really. And I don't accept the idea of the sense of immortality weighing on him so greatly. I mean, this is inherent in, I would imagine, in all Time Lords, that it's just part of who they are. They understand the long life and what comes with having that kind of a long life.
The
only difference is the Doctor has chosen to go out among the universe and live, as opposed to being, you know, a stuffy politician in the Panopticon or something like that.
We could at least partially make the argument that says if he had stayed among the Time Lords, then he would be amongst his peers and friends throughout that period of time, because their lives are roughly the same duration of a Time Lord's life. So, but by making friends with ephemeral beings, he does possibly feel their passing more often, because they simply more and more of them going. But, you know, it's just too much. It's too much. I am genuinely just tired of it. Okay, one thing then let's hit the big stuff and ignore the trivial stuff. There is one thing that came out of this episode that I don't know if it's intentional, or whether it's just a happenstance. You will recall 2 years ago, they made a big, painful, that's the only word I can say for it, painful production about the name of the Doctor.
Oh, please.
Okay.
Yeah.
And eventually we got to, it's not a name, it's a promise. Now, here we have our second immortal, and she has taken the name of me, let's call that her immortality name. This is an idea that because of what you have to have in your life, what she has is herself. And so that is what she has taken on as her name.
Right.
And she gives a long time. Is that not the same with the Doctor? He has taken the name of
the doctor
because what he has is to fix things. So
to be a helper, to be a healer,
I think
whatever,
this actually was, whether it was intentional or not, based on what they told us before, a Doctor is a promise, then this is, you do this to a human, it's different, and they can easily turn inward. The Doctor turns outward, a healer. A Shielder turns inward.
Oh, I could accept
me.
That. I could accept that, you know, given the Doctor who he is, a Time Lord, and everything, all the baggage that comes along with that, both good and bad, I could see him reaching outward like that. I mean, in fact, it's clear that's what he did. There's no question. There's no arguing that. That's exactly what he did. With a human who is not conditioned, especially one of at a young age. I mean, this is a theme which has been explored in literature more than once, especially with Anne Rice, when she's talked to me, you know, children that have been turned to vampires and how do they cope with the concept of immortality. I know that the TV series Highlander dealt with it. So it's not a new idea about having a young girl all of a sudden being given something that she's not emotionally equipped to handle. So I could accept the idea of her turning inward like that because there's nobody there with her. There's nobody there to guide her. In some sense, I could kind of see where the whole idea of the doctor having a sense of responsibility. I mean,
yes, I could, he knows he screwed up 30 seconds after he gave it to her.
Yeah.
So it's like that part really didn't quite work for me last week. It's like, wow, you the smartest man in the universe and you made that mistake anyway. You couldn't have sonicked it or whatever. He didn't have the sonic, but half sonicked it and made it so it doesn't last forever. Or, you know, it just wasn't quite, it was just so obviously a setup for this time and for, I'm sure, her return, which they've obviously demonstrated is coming, with the picture of her hiding behind Clara there. At a fundamental level, I mean, it's an interesting concept to have that responsibility and that regret and that concern about her. But it just doesn't work for me in this story. And I wish I could say that it did, but it did not. And then that's it. You know, I mean, that's all I have on the deep philosophical issues of this story, if there are deep philosophical issues on this story. I do kind of like the idea that her brain just isn't big enough to hold all the memories.
That was an interesting concept. That was a very interesting idea that because her brain isn't big enough, you know, that's why she's got the journal so that she can write everything down, you know, and that after a while, you know, it just starts dumping data, you know, that some part of the brain realizes is no longer useful and it just starts jettisoning it.
But the doctor being so bright hangs on to his, sort of, anyway, not human. What else have we got in this episode? We had Rufus Hound. I think it's Rufus Hound, which I believe is a comedian.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting to. It would have been funny. I'd read an analysis that wouldn't it be funny if, you know, now that he's got this immortality or the medic chip, you know, and assuming that it does extend his life a little bit, how awesome would it be if he ran into Richard Mace?
I could see the two of them.
That would be a hoot, especially if Mee's along for the ride. I mean, she's been warned about, you know, that whole visitation with the Terra Lyptals, although wouldn't that be a hoot? You know, she bumps into Doctor Number 5. That caused quite a consternation.
Yeah, it'd be as bad as River Song.
Ooh, yes.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about her knowledge of the Doctor in this episode. The Doctor questions her a couple times. How do you know I have a ship? What makes you think I'm the guy who leaves? And she says, well, you make ripples. Really? I mean, is that... There are some things in this story that I thought were really good. Like, for example, when the Doctor says, oh, I've got this technology, I can bypass any alarm system. And she says, with absolute seriousness, what's an alarm? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very difficult for the writer to put themselves truly in the mindset of a 17th century person. And so, you know, kudos for kind of attempting that. But then there are lines like the Doctor says, oh, you have this whole wide world to play in. And she says, it takes a day to get to Kent. But like, the speed of humanity had not changed at all in the 800 years she'd been alive. The time and distance it takes to go somewhere didn't really happen until the Industrial Revolution began starting. And so there's no reason for her in her 800 years to feel that she should be impatient for that. It just is.
That's how long it takes to get to Kent. It's not like it still takes a, because there's been no progress. There's been no speed progress in that period of time whatsoever. The speed of the horse is the speed of man. And so there's this a disconnect to me when I heard that line that just that says, she shouldn't be complaining about that. That's not something that she should really understand. And besides that, if you say you've got this whole wide world to live in and it takes a day to get to Kent, well, so what? You live forever.
Yeah, what's a day? You know, by this time...
That means the world is a bigger place.
Exactly. There's so much more to see. And she's been alive for so long now that already her perception of time should start to change. It's just part of the human nature. When you've got all this time in the world, you no longer start measuring it in terms of units of time, because time now becomes irrelevant. It's just that's just what happens. I mean, I'm not speaking from experience, but everything that I've read in science fiction, everything that I've seen, seems to suggest that when you become immortal, you just don't consider anything about time anymore. So this whole thing about, you know, it takes a day to get to Kent, I'm like, yeah, what's your point? Think about all the things you can see. I mean, granted, she's seen a lot, she's done a lot, but heck, there's still a huge world out there for her to see. And, you know, if she should continue to live, you know, well into the future, heck, next thing you know, there's an entire universe for her to see.
So, here's a question. Thinking back to last week's episode, the Viking village nestled there amongst the hills and mountains as it was in the scenery. Where was that?
That's a good question.
2 hours by longboat from wherever they found the doctor, and then they pulled into a scenic location that did not look like anything in England. So, I don't know, 800 years ago she lived in wherever? I mean, the Vikings were all over the place.
Yeah, they made their way down to areas of England.
Right.
At some point in Scotland.
They could easily have been in England, but yeah. Like I said, they digitally composited different mountains behind that little village so that it didn't look like England. And so I assumed it's somewhere on the continent.
Well, it's possible. We have no idea. I mean, I don't know anything about Viking history. And,
apart from the fact that they didn't have horns, which everyone is all up in.
Yeah.
Got their horns up in a hoot with. You know, that's a joke, right? From the Time Meddler.
Oh, God. That's going way back.
Way back when the doctor found the hat for a cow. Remember that he was making fun with Steven about the Viking helmet, and he said it's for a cow. Yeah, I mean I think that's what it is. I think that was a callback, but that's another story. That was last week, which had basically no bearing on this week. So I think our assessment, this is not a two-parter, but two separate episodes. Consistent, but yeah. So let's say she was on the continent somewhere and she's moved to England. Pretty much all the scenes we saw of her past life, from what the doctor was reading through, was all England.
Yeah.
So she's obviously stayed there for a long time, but she could easily have gone.
She could have migrated. I mean, traveling by
gone
ship.
Anywhere, yeah, all over the planet.
Yeah, traveling by ship is very common. It was very easy to do. She could have easily booked passage on some ship and made her way over to England, start a new life. I mean, she always – that's what she always did. I mean, she ran away. That's what the doctor said. I mean, you know, at a certain point, you know, you're running away. You're no different than the doctor. So, yeah, the idea of her making her way over, you know, if that was Viking country in last week's episode, then, yeah, I could see her making the trek over to England at this point and –
Crying out loud! Wouldn't you have? So this is set in the 17th century, I think mid 1600s. I want to say 1651, but I don't know why that number sticks in my head. But anyway, obviously have already discovered America.
Yeah.
And heck, there's a whole freaking other basically world to go explore that she could have gone off to do. I mean, it's not like she didn't have money. It's not like she didn't have the abilities. It's not like, you know, so all sorts of stuff she could have done. But
what I question is that she would have heard anything about the doctor, because no matter what you do, it does take a day to get to Kent, and you don't get it on the news or the radio.
Right.
So where would you hear this stuff? It's not...
It would be passed on by word of mouth, I would imagine. Maybe there might be some...
I don't know. You know, I don't think that it's like it's going to get passed on and pretty much everywhere in Britain's going to find out about it.
No, it would be very isolated.
Yeah.
And it'd be isolated in pockets. And I would imagine that as you went further out, the more distorted it would become until it just didn't exist anymore.
So that part made me question, was it Lion-O that told her that?
He wore a
somebody,
crown, too.
He had
a crown on.
Well, that was something of a verbal smoking gun. I mean, the way that they were playing that up, and then the excuse that they give is, I've been around, I hear things. It's like, oh, really? That's all it is? I don't think so. I really believe there's more to that story. Although, well, I believe there should be more to that story. Let me leave it that way. I don't believe there is, because I just don't think that the writing was smart enough in that one respect. But I believe that there should be more to that in terms of how she knows these things.
What else have you got?
Man. Really, it's not a whole heck of a lot. Like I said, there were times where I wasn't quite sure who was being psychoanalyzed, and then it became pretty obvious. Actually, they're both being psychoanalyzed. But you're coming up with slightly different results off the both of them, because they're not the same people, obviously. They've led different lives, and they come from different backgrounds. So naturally, the way they perceive their own actions and their own lives are going to be different, and how they react to events that happen in their lives are going to be different, because they are two entirely different people. But it was, but really, the whole thing was, this mirror psychoanalysis that was going on between the two of them. I mean, I know at one point I was watching this, I kept thinking, okay, doctor's got a good point on her. Oh, wait a minute. She's got a good point on him. Oh, wait, he's got a good point on her. And next thing I felt like I'm watching a tennis match. And then it became pretty clear. Yeah, you're right about each other is what it really was, essentially.
Mm.
But if I had to pick sides, I'd pick the doctor.
Well, of course, because he's the...
Because he's the Time Lord.
That's right. Oh, Rufus Hound. That's what we're talking about. Sam Swift, the Quick, the character of him. Actually, he wasn't terrible. But I really don't know who he is. And my guess is he must be a bit of stunt casting and a comedian. That would be my guess. Our British listeners can set us right on that as to who he is. Or I could look it up in Wikipedia, but I really wasn't that interested in him to bother to look it up. I thought it was it a mistake? At the beginning of the episode, the nightmare is doing the ridiculous funny voice, which is right out of one of the Blackadders, which one I can't bring to mind. Where Miranda Richardson's character must be Blackadder the Third, or Miranda Richardson's character is playing a highwayman.
Yeah. I know that's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I love that one.
And she's doing the voice, and it was very much like the voice that was being done here. So I think it was a callback. I'm not 100% sure, but that's what it made me think of instantaneously. But then when they meet up with Sam Swift, the Quick, and she's in costume and she is being the nightmare, she's talking in her own voice.
Yeah, that was dumb.
Did they forget to dub that? Or
I noticed that and I thought, wow, big mistake. That was a huge gaffe, in my opinion.
Yeah, but obviously you don't want to have your main actress having to have her voice dubbed over through the course of the episode, because then you don't get her performance. I understand why you do it, but I think for having the joke at the beginning, if that's indeed what it was, then it kind of falls flat later on when she's not disguising her voice as the nightmare. Doctor telling jokes? How did that work for you?
Oddly enough, it didn't bother me too badly. I could see that really irking a lot of people. And as I'm saying all these things, I realize I'm being very, very generous here. And I'm usually the one who's like horribly, horribly critical about the slightest thing. I could not see any – I don't know if I could see any of the doctors. Maybe – let me think about that. Some of the earlier doctors, well, not Hartnell. I might see Troughton do it. I could see him try to do it, but I see him get all flustered in the process and then completely blow it. Pertwee, no. Tom Baker, never. Peter Davison wouldn't even know how. Colin Baker's would be all full of sarcasm.
Mm.
But it'll be good nonetheless. I could see Sylvester McCoy's doing it. Paul McGann, no. John Hurt, War Doctor, definitely not. No sense of humor. Chris Eccleston, I could see him try but fail miserably. David Tennant, possibly. I might see him do it. Matt Smith, oh yeah, but he'd be waving his arms all over the place at the same time.
Yeah.
So now with Peter Capaldi doing it, yeah, I could see the Doctor making jokes. But I think in a situation like that, his was the only doctor that could do it right.
The man can play anything they give him so far. I mean, any line they give Capaldi, he can play it. But it does seem to be in this story, he goes to a standard Capaldi place where, like, I don't do banter, no puns. Right. And then by having to do it at the end, he's demonstrating that he'll do whatever it takes to achieve the goal. So in that respect, it's OK. And so he came off quite well as someone who was fighting to tell jokes because that's what the circumstances required. But it's not natural to him. I can't fault his performance on it. It's just I don't know.
It was we've never seen him do anything like that so far.
No.
Not to this degree. But again, I don't have a really big problem with it. And you're right. You know, you give this guy and he can do anything. Peter Capaldi, you know, I'm coming to even greater respect for him as an actor as he takes this part on. He is being able to bring out these other aspects to the Doctor, even when there are things going on that just really infuriate me. There are still character traits that he brings out which do scream of being aspects to the Doctor's personality. And this is yet another way that the Doctor comes in to save the day. Except this time, how does he save the day? He has to save the day by telling jokes. And strangely enough, I don't know what the pulse of Doctor Who fans are regarding this particular scene. I've only heard, or actually, no, I've only read one review for it, and the person liked it. I really haven't heard anybody else's take on it. I thought it kind of worked. I rather liked it. It was kind of a fun way for him to save the day.
Mm.
And it was great to see that kind of, you know, bouncing off like he was doing there. With our condemned man, it made it for an interesting scene. I enjoyed it.
Hmm. You know, I've been thinking about this a little bit the last few episodes, and perhaps we could even go back to last year. And well, all right, there have been some circumstances last year where that was a little bit different, but I wonder if they have changed the way they're writing the scripts this year in recognition of the fact, and I hate to even have to say this, but in recognition of the fact that Mr. Capaldi is an old man.
Yeah.
Because there is not any action in any of these scripts.
No, not really.
A scene where he jumped over something in this episode where he leapt off the stage, and they shot it in such a way that if that was him, it was such a simple little, you know, jump that was cut in such a way that it looked like a big leap off the stage. And of course, the he's ridden the horse before, and it's obviously the fakest BBC horse that they have in the stables.
Yeah. Well, we saw him do that. We saw him jump off a, you know, jump off a wall or a window into the Thames.
We saw him just slightly disappear out of sight with a slightly.
He was supposed to. I mean, I love the idea, you know, as you posed that he was actually diving. That would have been much better.
I think the script showed him dive off and plunge into the water and swim off. But
which would have
been
far more adventurous.
What
in
we
action,
got
like.
Was just whoosh, off and thing. And fine. I mean, that makes perfect sense. This is we've said it before. This is obviously a grueling show to shoot, and he's like,
and he's
couldn't do it.
No,
and he's
and
older than me.
Well, let's be honest. He's the oldest actor to have the part.
Yeah. So
I mean, he's older than Hartnell was when he had the role.
Right.
So I mean, we have to keep telling ourselves this, and keep things in perspective. I mean, whenever we see William Hartnell, we always think of the White Herald old grandfather because that's how we're introduced to him. Peter Capaldi, you know, and it's also the way people are today. We live longer lives, so you know that whole thing, you know, 50 is the new 40 kind of thing, or that whole shtick kind of plays into effect here. He may be older, but than Hartnell was, but he passes himself off as being more younger, healthier, more vital. We almost want to compare him to John Pertwee in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have to be realistic. He isn't a young man. It is very difficult. I mean, obviously, you could try and get a stunt double, and I'm sure he does for some of the really tough stuff. And we know that Matt Smith had one. In the case of Peter, but I think he also kind of gets a good sense of what works for his character and what doesn't. Maybe even Moffat does too. You know, I'll give Moffat a little bit of credit here. Maybe even too, he has an understanding as to, oh no, this really isn't this doctor's milieu to behave in this particular way. You know, I don't want him swinging in on a rope.
You know what he needs? James McCrimmon.
No.
Actually, you know, now that they're replacing Clara. Or they're getting rid of Clara. Who knows if they're replacing her? But I mean, you know, they're getting rid of Clara. Maybe it's time to think about, and if not, you know, Jamie, then Leela, or something, to split up that action show vibe a little bit with someone who can perhaps handle it more. Leave the brains to one side and the brawn to the other.
Mm, yeah,
it would certainly be a new dynamic for. New Who, instead of Lippy Companion. They've had a lot of Lippy Companions there, to be fair. None lippier than Donna. But you know, they've have that sort of spunky, I don't put up with your kind of nonsense stuff unless I'm falling in love with you kind of thing. So maybe, you know, maybe that's the answer. Maybe that's a different road that they could go down.
Yeah, possibly. It would be a nice... refreshing, you know, it would be a nice refreshing change of pace to get somebody like that. But then, well, now you have this double-edged sword that's going on here if you do that. You kind of take away a little bit of the attention from the Doctor, but then what have we always heard? You know, Moffat and RTD have always said the same thing. Oh, it's called Doctor Who, but it's not really about the Doctor. It's about the companions.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so you're going to make it about the companions? Fine. Give him a swashbuckling companion.
Well, and it, you know, Ian and Barbara, it was.
Yeah, in their case, it did work because you did need, especially with Ian, you needed, and actually even went beyond that. I mean, like Stephen.
Stephen carried on, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, you needed somebody who could do those things.
Jamie,
very much so. You needed that kind of a young, very action-y kind of character to do those kinds of things because either, well, and let's be honest, I mean, except for John Pertwee, who was the only one who I think could really pull it off right. It just doesn't look good on any of the other doctors to be action-like like that.
Tom Baker got away with it.
A little bit.
But, you know, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go with Clara out of the way. I was kind of happy she wasn't in this episode.
Yeah, Clara Light.
So obviously she's got a big episode coming up where they're Dr. Light and Clara Heavy.
Oh, do we want to talk about how telegraphed Clara's demise is in this episode?
In every episode this year, it's
I know,
been telegraphed.
But this one, it was like abundant. Just in this one story, even if it hadn't really been telegraphed in any of the others, this one was just like full of it.
Yeah, I mean, this is the series theme. It's like, I can't say that I'm... particularly like it. I mean, we mentioned it last time. I think that we've seen a consistent pattern where Moffat builds something up,
and then throws a curve at the end. So,
oh yeah, well we've been all we've been down that road too many times.
But it's every episode this year. Clara's going to die. Clara's going to die.
It's really heavy-handed. And I mean, we know that she was going to die last year anyway. Before Jenna Louise changed her mind,
was she going to die or was she going to leave?
She was going to die. She was going to die of old age in the Christmas special.
Right, in the Christmas. Well, she was.
The thing is that it was the idea of that being one of those brain parasite fantasy, you know, hallucinations, was interjected. You know, that was tossed in at the very end, at the last minute, in order to give us back a young Clara. She was going to die. I mean, that was that last scene where she's old and she dies was supposed to be reality. She was going to die of old age.
Well, I didn't realize she was going to die there. I just figured that having the doctor encountered her at that point, it's like, well, you know, hey, you can't come along.
No, she was actually to die of old age with a doctor right next to her. That was the plan.
Hmm.
And then when she, in the 11th hour, decided, no, you know, I'm really enjoying myself a bit too much. I want to stick around some more. You know, there's, okay, let's tack on another 5 minutes.
Okay, so how does that, so let's think about this in terms of audience then, since we're drifting off the episode anyway, which is fine with me. Companion dies, and unfortunately, you know, we have very few examples of this. So you have Adric, which, you know, everyone cheered. Woohoo! Companion dies. But if they killed Jenna off, if they killed Clara off young, boom, she's dead. Is that different than she left the doctor after the Danny Pink thing, which they parted normally, right? I mean, as many doctor and companion pairings do, they came to the point where it's time for me to go a different way in my life. And so they parted. And the doctor, because he's a time traveler, pops in 50 years later on her deathbed to say goodbye. That's not the same. That's, to me, that doesn't feel like, gosh, I can't believe you killed off a companion. Because I think Tegan and Nyssa and Stephen and Barbara, they're all dead too. I mean, I think of them as being dead.
Well,
you know, they went off with their lives and they lived a long life and they died. We know Ian's still alive in the current universe, but...
Well, there's also talk that Barbara's alive too and that they're actually not old.
I've heard that, but since the actress is dead, I'm not going to worry too much about it.
Well, I've got this theory that if they should ever choose to bring Ian and Barbara back, all you got to do is get the two actors who appeared in Adventures of Space and Time. Gee, how meta can you get?
Yeah, I don't think
it's not like you can't recast the part. It's been done.
I know, but then they'd have to come up with an explanation as to why they look like somebody else. How come I look like the actor that was in Adventures in Space and Time? I don't understand. And then
how is it that in the Five Doctors, I don't look like William Hartnell, I look like Richard Herndahl?
Yeah,
Move on.
I think that anybody who's thinking that Ian and Barbara are coming back is just wishful thinking on somebody's fervent imagination.
Well, they're not going to be back in Doctor Who, but they may be back in that new class spinoff.
But anyway, it isn't the same. That kind of death isn't the same. That isn't a cut short.
Oh, like
your life is right. That's a cut short. You're dead kind of thing. But this is just, I happened to pop back in on you a little bit late. Even in a way, the Brigadier was almost a cut short death because the doctor didn't get the chance to say goodbye, but he did get the chance to say goodbye to Clara if she had died at the end of the Christmas special. It would be sad, but it would not feel like
it. Well,
it
I'm not going to count
like
the Brigadier.
It wouldn't feel like there was a sudden unsurprising or a sudden surprising tragic end. It wasn't a tragic end for her. It was the end of a presumably somewhat fulfilling life. Unless they made it, you know, look horrible, like she was living with 47 cats in an old folks' home, dementia kind of thing. But you know what I mean? It's because they can play with it in time travel. It's kind of almost like that scene at the end of the Sam and Diane years in Cheers, where he has the imaginary
scene
at the end where he and Diane are sitting in the chairs and they're old folks.
Right.
It's not quite the same.
Oh, no, nothing like it.
No, but I mean, going to the old age phase is not the same as killing the character off.
Oh, of course not.
But
now,
anyway.
Whether they would go down that road again, and I don't think they will, because that would be just ridiculous to, you know, pull the whole old age trope again and use that on Clara. I think it'll be something else. And knowing Moffat, it's going to be something that's going to emotionally scar the Doctor. At least that'll be the intent.
I think that there's a real chance that he's going to pull a fast one on the killing thing. I mean, he's never really properly killed anybody very well, and with good reason. People don't like that. And I mean, if, for crying out loud, if they're going to give in and make up an excuse as to why Peter Capaldi looks like an actor who played a part in another episode of Doctor Who, because the fans need to know it,
they're never gonna
kill anybody off, because the fans will not be able to win it. And I don't think they work that way, but I do think that Moffat likes to lead you down a garden path, and he's just hit me over the head too many times that Clara's gonna die, Clara's gonna die, Clara's gonna die, Clara's gonna die, and it will not be. They almost did that with Donna. Oh, my gosh, that's Donna? Oh, gosh, that's going to happen to her? Oh, that's really bad. It's like, oh, they wiped her memory.
That's RTD, and that whole metaphorical death was just awful.
The death of personality kind of thing.
Yeah.
Who knows what will happen to Clara? Obviously, you know, maybe there's another alternate universe she can get trapped on. Not with Rose, obviously, in a different one, but something. It'll be something not quite as simple as death, I think. Maybe Moffat will fool me this time and actually do what he says, but I can't believe I even said those words.
Yeah, really.
So, anyway, that's all I got.
Yeah, because there's not really a lot to it. I mean, there's no big story, as you said. It's more about just this idea of what immortality is and how the Doctor feels this necessity to kind of save Lady Me. And, of course, now we know that she's obviously there in present-day Clara world. And
keeping an eye on Clara is my guess, is the way.
Yeah, although that look was awfully malevolent. And it has been confirmed that Maisie Williams is going to be back later this year.
Right. No, it's never any doubt in my mind.
Oh, it was plain as day.
Said that last episode. It's never.
And she'll
never the slightest any doubt that she had to be in for another
episode. I'm guessing because it will be towards the very end of the season.
Oh, absolutely. It'll be towards whenever Clara exits.
Towards Clara's exit. Yes, absolutely.
I think we still have that episode that's the totally one-hander for Peter Capaldi, and you know that seems to be a good place to be, the episode right after Clara dies or whatever she does. Whether or not it is, I can't say. But, you know, that seems like the kind of thing they might do. It's like, you know something? Now let's explore the turmoil and the pain. And he can sit around in the TARDIS and weep or whatever he's going to do for Clara. I hope it's better than that. By the way, did you notice that this year there are more roundrels in the TARDIS? I mean, last year
yes,
there were some, but there this year there's even more?
Yeah, there was talk about putting more inside.
It
was all part of the big redesign.
Speaker grills? Is that
what they are? For the Doctor in order to play the guitar? For Peter to play the guitar?
Because that's kind of what it looked like in that shot. It's like, wait, those are actually the speaker grills for his electric guitar.
Could be. It wouldn't surprise me.
So
it'd always be
his speaker grills? All the way back to Hartnell. Was that, you know, for Hartnell's electric guitar?
I'm trying
guitar?
To imagine, yeah, Hartnell wielding an axe. Although...
He's a lot younger back then.
Well...
He was just
a kid. I don't think every single one of them is a musician. I mean, let's be real. Troughton played a recorder. Peter Davison plays the harp. And Peter Capaldi can play the electric guitar. I don't think any other of them showed any acumen for music. In fact... Christopher Eccleston's Doctor had no sense of rhythm.
Well, he did have no sense of rhythm. I will agree. I have a feeling that one of those doctors, Tennant or Smith, made some comment about being in a band, like some famous band. You know, in one of those offhand throwaway remarks. I can't think of it. But you know how, like, oh, I met Marilyn Monroe and married her and this, that, and I spent some time in the Rolling Stones and
da-da-da.
There was something like that in one of those, but I can't remember which doctor and what time. So, yeah, they all can play the axe. All of them.
Probably. Yeah, but at least with Peter Capaldi, we know that he can really do it. So it gives it a sense of credibility, reality, legitimacy, believability.
I think for sure that next time is really a two-parter.
It bloody well better.
Well, I mean, we get two Zygon episodes back to back.
Yeah, it really screams of being a two-parter. I'm really curious about where that story is going to go because, I mean, already we've got Osgood, who, for all intents and purposes, is supposed to be the Zygon Osgood, but apparently because of the mind wipe that we had during Day of the Doctor, she still thinks she's the real Osgood.
Maybe. Or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe she is the real Osgood and the other one was the Zygon.
I'll preface this by saying Moffat always lies, but Moffat did say, no, it was the real Osgood who died at the hands of Missy.
Moffat always lies.
I know. So, I suppose we'll find out.
Well, we did see a picture of two Osgoods in the trailer, and we also know Osgood had a sister. So they don't know what they're going to try to come up with here, but anyway, it'll be lame. Whatever excuse they have to bring her back to life after killing her will be, oh, look, there's another person they killed, but they didn't, right?
Just
more fuel to my belief that they won't actually kill Clara. They'll do something else to Clara that might as well be dead because she will no longer be able to travel with the doctor. Otherwise, she would never leave. So, anyhow, so we'll be back in 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Yeah, that's right. We will be back
for
in 2 weeks because this will be a two-parter.
It'll be a two-parter, so there'll be stuff in between, which I suspect is probably Blake 7. But if my memory serves me correctly. Anyway, Ben, thank you for joining me.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And listeners, I hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Cheers.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us? Leave us a review on iTunes, or stop by and visit us at our website, FusionPatrol.com. Find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/FusionPatrol. Our Twitter username is @FusionPatrol, or you can just send us a comment at feedback@FusionPatrol.com. Come check out our new YouTube channel at YouTube.com/FusionPatrol. Please, come join the conversation. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf. Should I have said, on Fusion Patrol? Just to get the lead in and fade out?
No.
No. All right. Good night.
Night.